time is 2:07 p.m. We're back on the record for the formal hearing continuation of OPAPA 16-007 and 16-011.
Hey, Mr. Fernandez, just a reminder, you are still under oath, and we're still in the midst of Ms. Tang's direct examination of the witness. Your witness, Ms. Tang.
Thank you. Before I begin, just inquiring, we will be able to go a little later tonight, or
should the because parties?
I have to leave. I can't stay.
What time did you have to leave, Mr. Aggie?
5 o'clock at the latest, but 4:30 because I have to go down south to see my mom. She's actually ill.
I'm sorry to hear that, we will definitely try to accommodate that, and we'll see what happens after.
Okay, I'm just
Mr. Keeler is 5 o'clock. Would 5 o'clock be good for you then? Up to five? Or did you need to leave earlier?
If possible, earlier.
Earlier?
Yeah.
We'll see where we're at.
Five.
Okay, we'll see where we're at. But definitely, if we forget about that issue, Mr. Aggie, could you please remind me at 4 o'clock? You do have someplace important to go. Okay.
I just inquired because we left a message with Mr. Fisher. In case we finish with Mr. Fernandez today, I just wanted to kind of gauge whether we should have any witnesses.
Well, we'll see how hopefully we will finish with Mr. Fernandez today.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Fernandez.
Good afternoon.
Okay, so a question. During the evaluation phase, when the evaluation team reviewed the proposals, did it review the scope of work that was being provided or covered in the proposals?
We reviewed all members of the committee, the evaluation committee, had reviewed the RFP and the scope of work that was contained. And when we received the proposals, your question, did we review the scope of work contained in each proposal?
In the proposal,
yes.
As opposed
yes.
to the RFP, yeah.
Yes,
I'm just
trying to make sure I understand the question.
So when I say scope of work, I mean Exhibit A.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
As opposed to all the other scope of work. And did the evaluation team make a determination as whether scope of work Exhibit A was complied with?
I'd object to this line of questioning again as beyond the scope of the issues on appeal that CORTEC has raised. We're not deciding anything regarding the evaluation of the proposals. This has to do with post-evaluation issues. CORTEC had an opportunity to protest that. In fact, they did protest it back in January.
Can we just do that? Sorry. In response to Mr. Aggie's protest, it's not relevant to any of the issues on appeal?
It is. It's relevant to the issue of the modification of the proposals because the first step is the evaluation. And my question is, did they identify the scope?
I'm going to overrule the objections. Please proceed.
All right. So,
inquire.
And your answer, Mr. Fernandez?
I'm sorry. I just want to make sure I understand the question. Could you just restate it?
Right. My question is, did the evaluation team in evaluating the proposals, review each offeror's proposal to see if it complies with Exhibit A?
We reviewed the proposals and we deemed them responsive.
Mm-hmm.
Did we go piece by piece to
mm-hmm.
see which? We did not do it in that level of specificity, but we did review the proposals for overall responsiveness as a committee. We didn't have a discussion specifically about Exhibit A.
Okay, so just to be clear, you don't recall a specific review or discussion about Exhibit A during the evaluation phase?
Right, I do not recall a specific discussion about Exhibit A during the evaluation phase.
Do you know if anybody was tasked to do a separate review outside of the committee, for instance, DPW's assistants?
I believe DPW staff did review as well as they were opening the proposals.
What do you mean by that?
So when we convened, when the proposals came in November and were submitted, then the first, I think the first matter was for the evaluation committee to convene. And so we scheduled a date and time, and once we got there, that was when the proposals were opened and distributed. And I believe nothing prior to that point. So mm-hmm. I believe, and the opening was conducted by DPW staff as part of that first meeting, and then we were able to review each of the proposals as a committee.
Okay. And how long was the review? Was it an hour, 2 hours, do you recall?
30 minutes, maybe.
Per proposal or for entirety of the three?
My recollection was they did one first and at a time, so I don't know it was each. I don't think 30 minutes was when we got the first proposal
mm-hmm.
Open for us. I'm trying to recollect.
Okay. Maybe also in reviewing all three proposals, how long approximately did it take the team?
I would say maybe 30 to 40 minutes.
Okay. Before you started.
Meaning before the evaluation committee had the proposals then in front of us to look through.
So I think her question is how long did it take the evaluation committee?
To review it.
To review everything, not how long before you started.
Oh no, what I meant was at the meeting the DPW staff did open the proposals when we commenced the meeting, did a preliminary review and then provided us proposal, you know, starting with, you know, proposal one. Was brought to the table for the committee to start its review. So there was a opening of the proposals by DPW staff at that first meeting to make sure that everything was in order and gave it to us for our review. Kind of like a two-step.
So did you review it separate and apart from that? Did you have a chance, were you able to take the proposals back to your office to review, or were the proposals always kept at DPW?
The proposals were always kept at DPW, so if we wanted to review, we'd have to schedule time to come, and we could do it there
on
individually
your own.
If we needed extra time.
Yes.
Okay. So the 30 minutes was the setting up, if you will, right?
Yes.
And then you had an opportunity to review each of the proposals.
Right.
So the entire process took how long, approximately?
What is the entire process?
Like your opportunity to review that day?
I think what we did was we set up a time. We started with the first proposal, and we, as a committee, took our time to review that first proposal until we were done. I don't recall the timing. I'd have to go back and check my memory on this one as to how long. But we proceeded in sort of an order. So we gave the committee members an opportunity to review the packages, you know, themselves as they were presented to us by staff.
Okay.
I'm sorry, that's what you're asking.
Right, so I'm just kind of asking, is it within 2 hours, 3 hours, the process of reviewing it,
no,
approximately?
For all proposals?
Mm-hmm.
I believe I don't want to speak and be wrong about it, but I think with the process we set up, so we had identified a time period, that first meeting, for the committee to start reviewing those proposals, and we proceeded one at a time, those proposals at our individual pace.
So you don't
because
remember,
there were some. Yeah, I'm not about time frames.
All right.
I'm just trying to recall the process. But the process was proposals were presented and we were able to proceed. You know, so I would read proposal A. If I was a little bit ahead of the other members, we would, you know, be able to move on. And
so you each had the copy in front of you?
Yes.
All right. Okay. And I think earlier this morning you testified that you understood there was some flexibility with respect to Exhibit A. Right?
Yes.
Okay. And that your understanding as to that flexibility came from counsel. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
My understanding about flexibility was, I believe I verified my understanding of counsel, yes.
Who's the counsel that you verified this?
It would have been done in the committee,
mm-hmm.
in the committee setting, so I believe, again, depending on what meeting it was,
mm-hmm.
at least one of the two councils that are here today, Ms. Titano and Mr. Keeler were present. I don't recall the specific meeting.
So the question was posed to council, and do you remember the specific issue that was posed, the question that was posed?
So my recollection is that it came about during the negotiation stage where we started to talk about what could be negotiated, what scope of our negotiation. I had had one internal, I mean, one preliminary conversation with my staff to get my, you know, my input from Mr. Romero. Then I in the committee, I wanted to verify that I recall raising the issue. I don't know exactly how I phrased the question, but the point was, are we allowed to negotiate these matters?
Meaning, when you say these matters, are you specifically referring
scope.
To Exhibit A?
Correct.
All right. And what was the response?
The only reason I said I don't know exactly who said what is in the committee setting, my recollection is that it was agreed upon that we could negotiate some of the scope.
Again, what was the specific response? Did they say,
that,
yes, you
that
can?
That we had the flexibility to negotiate the scope.
And was there any... And was there any... did council direct you to any particular provision in the RFP or Guam procurement law? How was this information presented?
Okay, I think Ms. Tan, he's already testified how what he recollects, he was told by council.
Mm-hmm.
He already testified when or approximately he recalls when he received this information. I don't think we need to dwell too long.
No, I'm asking for any authority that may have been presented. If it wasn't, you can simply say no.
Okay, you
no
can
authority.
Ask what authority that is. His knowledge of, but.
Was there any, thank you, was there any authority presented with respect to this particular issue that would give the negotiating committee flexibility in changing Exhibit A?
I don't recall any specific authority being discussed.
Okay. So is it your testimony today that the negotiating committee, including yourself, relied on counsel when you made or requested the additional modified proposals?
Just to clarify, the additional modified proposals would be the $89 million.
The four.
The six, and I want to make sure you talk about three or four. There was.
Mr. Fernandez,
just want to
make sure that you're talking closer to the microphone.
Okay. My understanding is that when you're talking about proposals, you're referring to four different scenarios, which included the initial $73 million, $89 million. That's what I want to clarify.
No, so the original proposal is the $73 million
correct.
Plus 16.9.
So that's
the original proposal. What we call the modified proposals are the ones that came in March and April. 77.6, 63.7, 74.9, and 78.1. So those are the four modified proposals.
Objection.
That's what we call them.
You're right, Mr.
Kelly. Mr. Fernandez has testified that he's using a different term. He doesn't. I don't think it's appropriate to characterize them when that's not how he's characterizing them.
And I have joined in the objection. For slightly different reasons. I mean, Ms. Tang is also arguing, providing testimony on her own, characterizing what that original proposal was in relation to the four other different scenarios. She's saying that those are modified proposals. That's not what his testimony was.
Ms. Tang?
I think it's very clear that the proposals changed and there were over $26 million in difference in price. They were modified.
Okay, but in terms of the question, the specific thing,
I'm happy to
putting words in the witness's mouth, literally, right. That's the issue. So I'm going to ask you to limit your questioning to actual questions and not going to sustain the objections.
All
of the
right.
Part. Okay.
So I'm going to direct you to Exhibit Nine. Yeah. And go to page two of that. This is Mr. Romero's memo. Familiar with it, right?
Yes.
All right.
What exhibit?
Exhibit nine, page two. So in the middle, there's a chart.
Yes.
There is under the first proposal says RFP, right? And it's 73.2 million. And there are four separate, it says Simon, under column Simon Sanchez proposal, there are four separate ones dated March 3rd, March 21st, April 1, April 5th. So referring to Exhibit 9, Simon Sanchez proposals with those four dates that I just referenced, so we're clear on what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Based on advice of counsel, that you had flexibility, that the committee had flexibility, the committee solicited these four Simon Sanchez proposals dated March 3rd, March 3rd, 21st, April 1, April 5th, 2016, from GIEF?
I just an objection to the question, lack of foundation. She hasn't asked Mr. Fernandez whether he's even familiar with this exhibit, from what I can recall.
I think he did.
I can overrule the objection. I think there has been some testimony about the exhibit and his familiarity with it. Please proceed.
Please.
So my recollection of this matter is that I'm familiar with the initial proposal, and there was, as we started the discussions with GIEF, there we received, as you know, about all-in costs and what was included and what it was excluded. We were able to reach the $77.7 million. What you're asking about the negotiation committee, I can say that for a couple of them, they were solicited by the committee. At least the $64 million one, where the committee did say, please see if, you know, what you know, the proposal where it was closer to the $60 million mark. I have to say that for the two ones on the bottom, I don't recall that the committee solicited them, but I also was, I believe, off island at that time. So that may be why I don't remember that discussion.
But you did
solicited those.
But you did, as a committee member, you received the April 1 and April 5th proposals.
Yes.
All right. And again, back to my question, at least with respect to the 63.7 million, and how about the March 3rd one, 77.6?
I'm familiar with that.
Was that also solicited by the committee? I believe that.
Once again, let's try not to talk at the same time. Please proceed.
In reliance on counsel's advice that you had flexibility, did you solicit the March 3rd and March 21st proposals?
I would have to say that I would say we asked for that proposal, yes. I mean, it was a part of a discussion about, you know, how do we go from 73 to 89 million? What costs were included and excluded? And I believe they came back and said, well, our all-in costs are at, you know, there's a $77 million range where we can put our all-in costs. So that was that first proposal that was provided. When you talk about soliciting, I do think that it was the 21st where the committee unilaterally, you know, not in discussion, but unilaterally said, please produce that scenario.
Okay.
Right, so that's
let's just
I mean.
Focus on the 21st. We'll go through each one of them. I just wanted to kind of direct your attention to that so that you know which proposals I'm talking about and so there's no confusion. Please just answer the question. Did the negotiating committee rely on counsel's advice that you had flexibility, which was the basis for requesting at least the March 21st proposal for $63.79 million?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. And did that opinion regarding flexibility ever get put in writing, or was it just a verbal opinion?
I believe it was more along the lines of a verbal opinion, but more of the lines of we asked it in a committee meeting whether we were able to negotiate anything around the scope, and I believe the answer was an affirmative. Nothing in writing that I recall.
All right, so I'm going to direct you to my units that have, are in favor. There's an exhibit called Exhibit 47 in front of you. It's a loose document.
Okay.
Earlier you testified that you had some preliminary memo from Mr. Romero giving you outlining the negotiation criteria. Are you referring to Exhibit 47, the
yes.
memo attached to it?
Yes.
And did you have any discussions with anyone regarding the Exhibit 47 memo?
My conversations with Mr. Romero are mostly to inform myself about his opinion about how to proceed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall specifically discussing this document.
And he's very experienced in procurement, correct?
I'm familiar with the work experience that we've had on the procurement that he was worked with under my tenure. So.
Right, so under certain under your tenure,
yes.
That's right. And you rely on him to assist you with this, with your duties as the director of, no, I'm sorry, the superintendent and the evaluator, and your evaluator role and your negotiating committee role.
Right. Recognizing that the Department of Education did not have procurement authority, I did
mm-hmm.
not engage my procurement staff on this matter, but I relied on Mr. Romero for his input.
Right. And did you provide a copy of Exhibit 47, negotiating criteria, to anyone on the negotiating board committee? Excuse me.
I don't recall whether Mr. Romero did.
Oh.
I don't believe I did personally. So.
All right. Did you have discussions with anyone on the committee, negotiating committee, regarding this memo?
I would have to say, my recollection, we did not discuss this particular memo. I believe we discussed the negotiations in general and in the general negotiation approach and had that discussion, but without reference to a specific.
I see. Okay. And I'd like to go to Exhibit 48, please. Should be the next document.
Okay, I'm looking at Exhibit 48.
All right, this is a March 3rd, 2016 correspondence from Jeff, correct?
Correct.
And you've had experience with Jeff?
Right, as a landlord of the Lee schools, and
when you say the Lee schools, which schools
they're
are
they? The Lee schools, so that would be Okudu, Attica Elementary, League One Elementary, and Estumo Middle School. So
right.
The landlords, and also in their role with the expansion of Okudu High School.
All right. Was that something that they presented or taken into consideration as in this particular RFP proposal, their involvement in the four schools for evaluation purposes?
Am I allowed to say what it's included in their proposal?
Okay, let me rephrase that question. Let me ask you. So, in your role as evaluator, was it your understanding that that GIF and their work with respect to the four schools and expansion of Okudu was relevant?
I'd object to that question as going again into the evaluation of the proposals. That's beyond the scope of their appeal.
What's your offer of proof on this issue, Ms. Tan?
I think that the issue of the evaluation was kind of wide open at the last hearing.
Okay,
let's
say it was. Okay, let's say, for example, all right, the evaluation was wide open, as you said. What issue, Cortec has brought before the OK, is that relevant to?
I think we would like to, this goes to the issue of bonding. It starts with GIF, GDB.
I think I'm going to sustain the objection. Please move on, Ms. Tan.
All right. Mr. Fernandez, focusing on exhibit 48. Seen this letter before?
Yes.
All right, and says starts with as requested yesterday, right? So, and just directed to Mr. Kanayan. So it was requested pursuant to a call with you and others, others being others of the committee, negotiating committee?
I believe so. I don't, I would have to refresh my memory. I don't recall exactly who was on the line.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, who else would be on
the line? Well, there's a negotiation committee, and then I know, I don't know if there was staff involved, but definitely
right, right.
representatives of the agencies.
At least,
okay. Yes.
So you agree that at least there were committee members on the call?
Again, I'm not sure exactly who was on it, if all agencies were represented, but I believe it was part of the negotiation committee discussions.
Okay. And what was the purpose of this letter that was solicited by the committee?
So during the negotiations, we were looking at trying to identify price points and negotiations to get us to a fair and reasonable price, which is why you see some of the scenarios tested. I believe the other approach to try to find a fair and reasonable amount was to try to identify an appropriate benchmark. I can't testify as to the exact timing of those discussions, but I know that we did seek GIDA's verification of what different projects had cost to construct. I know there was initial discussion with Randy that whether or not these were entirely accurate, because they might have, I believe we received a couple of conflicting numbers or amended numbers from GIDA. So my recollection is that we would have asked this to try to establish with the most recent project that we had done an appropriate or you know, a benchmark that we could look at from a per square footage, you know, just to get an idea of what the last project had cost.
The per square foot cost is what you're
right.
talking about.
Right, understanding so, that they would have that information since they were had constructed it, and that would be some basis for us to look at Simon Sanchez and try to compare.
So when you say appropriate benchmark, you wanted to compare, in this case, the cost of Okudu per square foot versus the cost of Simon Sanchez per square foot. Is that what you mean?
For this particular memo,
yes.
I believe we were interested in all lease, I mean, there are other lease schools that we were interested
right.
in as well. Yes.
All right. So when you refer to as price, you were focusing also on price points.
Right.
Can you tell me what that means?
So so I'm trying to recall the timeline. What we received early on was $73 million and jumped to $89 million. And I believe at least my reaction on the committee was this is entirely too high for my recollection of what we spent on other schools. And so I think part of my concern was that we weren't really, at this particular point, able to gauge what would be a ballpark, a price that would be able to accomplish the scope set out in the RFP. So at this particular point, I think there was a couple of things going on. Number one is that we had already done a few projects under this lease-leaseback arrangement, that it would be a good idea to go and try to get benchmarks so we could evaluate the price, and then later on make sure we understood the impact on scope if we went one way or the other. So that's why I call them scenarios, because I think as you can see with the $63 million or $4 million proposal, that was a concern with regard to Exhibit A and how we accomplished that scope.
Right. So actually, when you said, I think you said it jumped to 89.3 million. So you're saying you're referring to the original proposal submitted by GIF.
Correct.
Right. That was originally 73.2, and you added 16.1, became 89.3. Did it shock you when you discovered during negotiations that it was really 89.3 million?
It concerned me that when we started negotiations, I wanted to clarify what number we were starting from the negotiations. There was some clarification by GIF that there were costs that were included and excluded under their interpretation of the RFP. And when we heard that information, the committee as a whole joined to request that we have a full understanding of all the costs.
And
that's when they came, the, the additional information.
How was the information that GIEF presented included and excluded certain price information conveyed to the negotiating committee?
I believe it was in that memo that was provided where it itemized the amounts
okay.
that had not been included.
Well,
the memo we saw earlier.
The letter, right. But I will tell you that's a response, but there was a conversation, prior communication, that would have alerted the negotiating committee. Do you recall what that communication was?
It must have been in the first meeting, the first or second meeting with GIEF as we sat down to commence negotiation.
Mm-hmm. And
that's my recollection. It would have been early on, given the time frame, because at least while I was not leading the negotiation, I wanted to get a clarification of what number, you know, as far as DOE, what number we were looking at. My take on
go ahead.
I was chair of the evaluation committee, but you know, I think we were working through how to proceed to the negotiation with various agencies and the parties. Eventually, we had authority to start working directly to flesh out the financing with GIDA. GIDA could work directly with GIEF. We would work directly with GIEF on the program of the school to make sure we understood the impact.
All right.
But at that stage, in the first stage of the negotiation, I believe that we were concerned about making sure we understood that cost proposal because we had not gone through that in this specific detail as part of the evaluation because it wasn't part of the evaluation factors. But we started to focus in on, did we have a good understanding of what was included in that cost?
Did someone from the negotiating team raise the exclusion of cost or omission, or did someone from GIEF just raise it?
I believe GIEF clarified that in my recollection. For the first, I mean, one of the things I do remember as a very, sort of an easy one was we did not include the contribution to the arts. That was, part of the construction cost. And I don't recall the justification for the others, but there was that kind of discussion that there are other costs that are associated with the work.
Okay. Now, if the proposal, when you understood, the committee understood that $89.3 million was the all-in proposal that GIEF had submitted, that did not leave very much for the remaining schools, correct?
Correct.
Left about a little under $11 million.
Correct.
And did that concern the committee?
It concerned me. And I believe other committee members, but definitely concerned me. Given what that there was $100 million at stake. So.
Yeah. There was a cap of $100 million?
Yes.
What do you mean by $100 million at stake?
The RFP, that we were working with $100 million only. And so whatever the price, whatever the cost agreement would be on Sam and Sanchez, that remainder would be available. Only that remainder would be available for the other schools, at least under this RFP.
Okay. And was there a point at which the committee went back to, did the committee discuss going back to GIEF and say, look, your proposal was 73.2. That, we think that should be an all-in number.
I can recall that, can I recall that specific discussion and request? I can't. I know that we definitely had a discussion about the all-in cost at 89 being, high cost. And I know that we definitely talked about the $64 million, trying to get a much lower proposal and seeing whether that would, be a substantial impact on the scope.
Was there ever an internal cost estimate prepared by DPW for this project, Simon Sanchez, that you could use as a baseline?
No, I don't recall.
All right. And I'll ask you to go to Exhibit 49. It's a March 16th letter.
Yes.
It's from Public Works to
which exhibit again? I'm sorry.
49.
Thank you.
Thank you.
looking
so at So paragraph two.
Okay.
References the February 29th letter that shows the breakdown of 16.1 million, right? We saw that earlier.
Yes.
Right. And it was DPW's position, at least on March, in this letter, that the proposal did not include the $16.1 million cost portion, correct?
Correct.
Now, the next paragraph, you're at the committee, or DPW, on behalf of the committee, is asking B to provide a detailed cost breakdown for constructing Simon Sanchez High School with a budget of $16 million. See that?
Yes.
How did the committee arrive at a number of $16
million? I believe that number was thrown out there by one of the members of the committees.
Who?
I believe it was Gita.
All right. And any particular person? Ms. Tyron?
Yes.
All right. Do you recall how that information was, what that discussion entailed?
The only thing I can recall from that discussion was that obviously there was some sticker shock at $89 million. We wanted to know, if you, I guess to try to understand what was included in this cost and how to get to that comparison, we wanted to be able to press the offeror to rethink its the cost, and we want to provoke that. We said, let's go at a lower cost as if we only were able to spend $60 million on this project. But what would that look like with regard to what you can afford?
Right.
So more along those lines of testing a low-ball scenario.
Right. Mr. Fernandez, but at that time, the evaluation committee knew what Cortex price was, right?
Yes, it did.
Okay. So was the $60 million, and I think Cortex price was all-in was $63 million, right?
63 or 61, that's around that.
Correct. And was it not what the, is that the basis for the committee requesting Cortex price? Was that the basis for the committee requesting Keith to sharpen its pencils?
I don't recall whether Cortex proposal was the reason. I know that there were different prices that were put out there, whether it was 65, 60, 70, they definitely did hover around that amount.
Right, and was Pernix's price compared, reviewed?
Pernix's price was known as part of the review of the proposal that was included in, but I think the issue, and so that was included in our, in that analysis memo you saw.
Right. And, but it was pretty high, right? Pernix's price.
Yes.
So the focus was, there was some focus. Was there a discussion about Cortex price at $61.5 million?
My recollection is that it was hard to do any apples-to-apples comparison between any of the price offerings because we did not go through that level of what's, and what we were trying to do with GEEF was determine what that number meant and being able to break down those costs that were not broken down as as much detail as we would like in their initial proposals, to start to go through that breakdown of costs in the negotiation phase.
But you had, as part of the evaluation committee, reviewed the proposals and concluded that all three proposers were responsive, at least to the extent that they complied with Exhibit A scope of work, right?
We determined that the proposals were responsive, and we proceeded to evaluate all three.
Right. And so what was there to determine the apples and apples or apples on basis when it came to negotiation?
You're asking if we considered Cortex price as part of this discussion, and I would say that we did not do it in a way that was very detailed because we didn't have that information. I believe, to be able to do any of that. So we basically picked a number, the committee asked Keith to respond, and then we waited to see what that would look like. And then when it did come to us, we did not accept that. I had concerns about the fact that if there was significant modification in Exhibit A that would render that $63 million price unacceptable. So that's,
why 60 million? Why not 50 million?
It could have been 50 million. I think the idea was to find a test scenario to push the offeror to really help us understand the stark differences between what those prices would be. If we had asked for an $85 million instead of $89 million proposal, I don't think we would have been able to really test the sensitivity of those different prices on the scope.
Now, you call them testing the sensitivity, but what you were really doing is asking for...
Hey, Ms.
I object.
Ms. Gang, you're starting to testify. Can you please
ask
the witness a question?
Thank you. I'll do that.
Objection? Was that your objection?
Yes.
I'll refrain. Exhibit 49, and you asked the March 16, 2016 letter. When the committee asked, the negotiating committee asked, Keith, and I'll quote this, provide a detailed cost breakdown for constructing Simon Sanchez with a budget of $60 million. It was asking it to consider, and it's bullet points below, the various factors, design, cost, demolition cost, collateral equipment cost, construction, right?
Yes.
And then on the following page it continues. So did Geef provide a response to this?
They did provide a response for I'm certain of that. Yes.
All right, and they did so in Exhibit 50. March 21st proposal.
Okay. Yes.
All right. And in this proposal, they identify the changes they made on page 2, correct? I'm sorry, GDO E 640, page 640, which is the second page of this letter.
Yes.
They eliminated, they increased the students per classroom from 25 to 30.
Right.
Eliminated auditorium, combined the cafeteria with the stage.
Yes.
Eliminating computer rooms, eliminating lighting and bleachers, downsizing workrooms and offices. Correct?
Correct.
All right. And attached to it, you'll see GDOE 641, 642, 643.
Yes.
And 644. This is what it's been referred to as the program of spaces.
Right.
Right. And this recalculates the cost in the area and the details of the new program and proposal, correct?
Correct.
And the last page, GDOE 645, is the cost breakdown of this $63.7 million proposal.
Correct.
And this was rejected, correct? Or not accepted?
We did not agree to this.
You did not. It was rejected.
Essentially.
Right. And why did the negotiating committee reject this?
I know. I can say the reasons why this is was not acceptable. I don't recall the negotiating committee action to say we officially reject this. But I do know that when we received this, our concern at DOE was that we were starting to negotiate. Even though we felt we had flexibility, there were some items that we considered to be deviations that were not acceptable, such as eliminating the auditorium, assuming that there would be 30 students in each room at every single time, so that would, you know, change the space. And so that was, there was a concern that at that amount, there are going to be operational impacts that we would like to avoid, especially if it was a new school, to avoid from the start.
So I'm gonna,
these issues.
Okay, so keep exhibit 50 in front of you, okay. This page, but I've asked you to go to your binder and open up to exhibit 9, page 2, which is Mr.
Yes.
Romero's memo.
Yes.
April 19th.
Okay.
All right, so page 2, at the top of page 2, he is discussing this March 21st, 2016 proposal for 63.7 million dollars, correct?
Yes.
And in his, he summarized that the changes basically reduce the area by 85,000 square feet.
Right.
And in addition to the other changes that we just discussed in the letter.
Correct.
Right? And there's a highlighted portion in that paragraph says that just a proposal did not meet the required needs of the school operations. You agree with that?
Yes, I agree that it didn't meet the needs of our school operations.
Right.
Yes.
And so what steps did you take next after rejecting the $63.7 million proposal to move this negotiation forward?
So my understanding of the of what happened after that was that we were able to go and evaluate this proposal with the school to determine and make sure we were, we understood what impacts, you know, how this, you know, to get the school's input as well on these impacts. And so that we could, so the, I guess the idea was, you know, we, I felt that, you know, in supporting this effort to start at a low number, was that we would then start with a low number, then be able to, if we felt that there were things that were critically, you know, missing, we would be able to make sure we added those back in. And I believe that was the process now to, that we, that was, that went on in that analysis to build back up that number.
So just for,
from 63 to 74.
Clarification purposes, referring to exhibit 50, the March 21st, 2016, proposal from you for $63.7 million.
Right.
This proposal did not meet Exhibit A requirements, correct?
Correct.
All right, so I'm going to take you to Exhibit 51. It is the third, if you look at Exhibit 9, page 2, the April 19th analysis, it's the third new proposal under Simon Sanchez column for 74.9 million.
Objection. Again, she is mischaracterizing the superintendent's testimony.
I was referring to Exhibit 9.
She is referring to Ms. New proposals.
I join in the objection.
I'm referring to Exhibit 9. There's a column that says Simon Sanchez proposal. There is an April 1st, 2000 proposal, 74.9. I'm calling it exactly as they call it.
Well, roll the objection based on the language you use in Exhibit 9. Please proceed.
Okay, Mr. Fernandez. So, focusing on the April 1, 2016 proposal for 74.9 million. Okay, so this is what came in. Tell me how this was how this proposal developed.
I believe Mr. Romero would have been better to address this, but my understanding was that he would work directly with the school and DPW along the way to get the school's input as to the impact and to see if we could move closer to meeting the requirements of Exhibit A and expecting that the price would also be impacted. So I guess I consider this as part of the back and forth of negotiations that they had presented $64 million. We felt it did not meet the Exhibit A requirements. And in trying to go back to including those facets that were removed, we would then try to price that out. And I think that's why the number climbed back to 74, and we were able to get some acceptance by the school that it, you know, that we were able to make sure we didn't miss some of the critical pieces that needed to be a part of this new school.
And it was also important consideration that there'd be some money left over for the other schools.
That's always been a consideration, yes.
That's a big consideration.
Yes.
Right? And so, in that, certainly in that respect, price was very important because you wanted to leave some money for the other schools.
Well, it was, price was very important, as well as making sure that the school that was built was going to be a good school in, mm-hmm. in terms of quality and those future needs. So capacity was very important for the school, making sure that we didn't modify all these, the modernization piece, like the computer rooms were eliminated. And I said, well, we want to make sure technology is incorporated. So there was some of that, you know, discussion and evaluation of each of these different, you know, cost proposals that we were looking at.
Okay, so this Exhibit 51, the April 1st, 2016 proposal for $74.9 million,
mm-hmm.
This proposal did not meet the Exhibit A requirements in its entirety, correct?
Yes, you're correct.
Yes, it did not meet
it. It did not meet it.
All right, okay. And let's go to Exhibit 52. This is a communication between yourself and Mr. Romero.
Yes.
And commenting on, I think, the latest proposal at that time was the April 1 for $74.9 million.
Yes.
So you're telling him here in the second paragraph, I'm not sure what this price represents and why we are going in the other direction. All right, so can you tell me why you expressed, you wrote this?
Because, well, you know, obviously the ideal situation for the Department of Education would be to get the school that we want at a great price, but incorporating the wish list that we were able to as much as possible. And so as part of any negotiation, my concern was, are we pressing them hard enough? Are we being too soft, too hard to try to get to a final agreement? So I expect the fluctuations. But you know, I think early on, we were very unclear that it was $89 million. What did that encompass? What was impacted? So as we went through this process, I could see the price climbing back up towards that $73 million, $77 million range. And I really wanted to make sure that we didn't end up where we were before and maybe getting less than we had started with when they first put their price on the table. So I think part of it was really trying to get clarity and relying on Mr. Romero's assistance, getting clarity in how we should be viewing these negotiations. It's not just about price going up and down, because we could always agree on lowest price, but are we able to get as much as we can as we expressed in Exhibit A.
Okay. Now, I think what that prompted was another proposal, which is dated April 5th, 2016, for $78 million, correct?
I believe.
It's not in that group. Let me
okay.
show you. It's attached to the Notice of Intent to Proceed.
Okay.
So that would be Exhibit 12, the Negotiating Memorandum. Sorry.
Okay.
And it begins on CT12-006.
Okay.
So this would be the last proposal dated April 5th. I'm sorry. I'm looking at Mr. Romero's analysis.
Okay.
And it's on page 2 of Exhibit 9,
right.
And he has April 5th. But what we have is, and I will admit to you that that's all we got, is the last one, April 22nd. Was there an intervening one on April 5th for $78 million?
I don't believe, I'm not sure. I don't recall anything written. I know that was an ongoing discussion between the parties, but I'm not sure If it's not in here, I'm not sure if there's a...
Okay, so the final one was, if you look at CT 12,
right.
Page 12,
yes.
The final price was 76.8. So there was a $78 million proposal. So I have to say I've not seen that. We've gone through the procurement record. Do you, was
I don't recall, and this is part of the time when I was, off island.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But there were, I mean, do you have any reason to believe that Mr. Romero's report is not accurate?
I don't have reason to believe that because I know that there were active discussions, and some of that might have been verbal from someone, I don't know. I don't recall seeing an exact memo with that, specification, if that's what you're asking for.
Okay, but that reduced the, that still, is it your recollection that doesn't, that the April 5th proposal for 78.1, did that comply with all of the requirements of Exhibit A?
So, I don't know. My recollection of the negotiation process...
I object.
Go ahead, Mr. Keel.
Exhibit A is entitled considerations. It's not entitled requirements.
I think we've gone through... right, Ms. Tang, on that objection?
I think we've...
Did you use the wrong
word? Can
we
beat the dead horse?
I think we are beating a dead horse.
Yes,
we're
right.
Arguing
so
about
me,
language.
Right.
You know, we've already gone through... could you please rephrase the question? I'm going to sustain Mr. Keel. On, please.
So, to your April 5th, 2016 proposal for $78.1 million, did it comply with the Exhibit A design parameters?
Right. My recollection is that those proposals were not acceptable to me or not satisfactory. And the reason why I'd say that is because we had, I guess my approach, my suggested approach was if we were going to start with a low number at 63 and build up, that if we were going to get back to the original ballpark of where we were, that it should include everything that was originally proposed should have been encompassed. So that's why I believe we got to this April 19th memo, where I asked my staff to please look at this process to make sure that we're getting the best that we can for the department.
Okay.
And I think that's that memo that describes a little bit of, you know, the frustration trying to make sure we're clear on everything and how do we should approach this came about. And because of that memo, I felt that we became more focused as a committee in saying, okay, we've tested these scenarios. Now, how do we get to a cost agreement that will meet Exhibit A as much as possible?
Okay, so we'll get to that.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at Exhibit 9.
Right.
This is the memo you're talking about, right? The April 19th
yes.
memo. And is this your highlight? Do you know whose highlight
it's
that
not
is?
Mine.
Okay. And you didn't put the stars there either?
No.
All right. You've read this memo, I'm sure, numerous times.
I've read it, yes.
Is there anything in here that you disagree with?
Well, you know, the memo itself was solicited from my staff.
Mr. Romero.
Mr. Romero. He's not, you know, formally part of the procuring agency team and so forth, so I considered it as any input would be and to be rejected or accepted by the committee. But for me,
for you,
it was to be provided to give me some guidance as to how I might think about the negotiation process and then ensure that we feel comfortable with the final agreement.
I understand.
So that's why you in this you'll have the history of these numbers as well as benchmarks, and then whether he's right or wrong, I don't know. I just wanted to make sure that he provided his best advice to me as his superintendent.
I understand.
Okay.
But in reviewing this memo,
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying about the committee, take issues with any of his either observations, comments, or conclusions?
I don't think I disagree with the memo. I mean, I took it, the way I received it was pushing back on how we were proposing, or how we were negotiating, and pushing back in a way that we would try to get as much as we could for whatever price that we could, you know, negotiate and try to maximize resources for other schools. So when he says it's very clear and here's how I recommend we go about it, I took it as advice,
mm-hmm.
But not necessarily the agreement of the committee.
No, I understand.
So
I'm
took
suggesting
it,
that.
So I agreed very much because I asked him, push back on what we're doing here so I can get a sense of how to tighten up the negotiations so they don't just wander off and we never get to an agreement.
All right. And did you respond to him in writing in relation to the any of the issues in this memo?
No, I considered it more of a thought.
Okay.
At least for me to just reflect on as I went through my role.
And this was very helpful to you?
It was, yes.
All right. It's very thorough, by the way. You agree?
Yes.
All right. And did you find, in the course of your review of documents and negotiation process, did you find any information or statements in this memo to be not true?
I didn't. It was shared with the committee, negotiation committee, so
mm-hmm.
I also assumed that if any other agency felt that it was erroneous or whatever was collected, they would notify us. But to the best of his ability, I'd asked him to pull these resources together. From
right.
That.
And this memo, as you said, was shared with the committee, so all of the committee members received a copy of it.
I believe so.
All right. And how was it delivered to them? Was it emailed and... or was it hand-delivered to them during the meeting?
I don't recall. I would assume it was, I don't know, I don't recall.
But it was shared.
I believe so.
Yeah. And do you recall if, were there discussions in the committee meeting, negotiating committee meetings regarding the contents of this memo?
I don't recall specifically discussing the details of this memo.
I'm sorry?
I don't recall specifically discussing the details of this memo.
Did anyone...
I don't believe we sat down and went through it at all. I don't know.
Did you receive any response from any committee member, whether by phone call or by email or just in person, responding to this this memo?
Not specifically. To this memo, I mean, I the issues contained in this memo, I recall that, you know, of course everyone was concerned with what we're going to get and at what price. And so,
okay.
I believe the progress of negotiations was always an issue for the negotiation committee.
So
my recollection is that, you know, at this particular point, DOE had played a more significant role in working with DOE on the program. So obviously, Randy was very involved at this stage in working through the details of what the proposals would look like. So I believe everybody, you know, understood that DOE was very involved in, and of course, the deference to, you know, what the school was saying in terms of our needs.
Was this copy of this provided to council present at the meeting? Negotiation committees meeting?
The council for
anyone
ours?
Yes.
For
no, not your council, but... You said council was present during this negotiation.
I do believe council had a copy of it.
Which, who did you deliver to?
I believe Mr. Keeler would have a copy of it.
All right. And did you have any response or comments from him regarding the contents of this memo?
I don't recall any discussion of the contents of the memo. I do know there was a discussion that we were aware that this memo had been produced. But it was also at a stage where the negotiation committee was looking to find a way to, you know, conclude this negotiation. And I believe where we ended up aligned with, you know, the process or the thought process aligned. You know,
okay. So I'm going to focus you on Exhibit 9, the memo, page
okay.
1, third paragraph, referring to Exhibit A.
Right.
And the last paragraph sentence says the design parameters described in the RFP is intended to establish standard level for all potential offers.
Right.
Was there any discussions in the committee at that point, having received this memo, about maybe that the RFP Exhibit A isn't all that flexible?
I don't recall discussing that specifically. I mean, like I said before, I did recall discussing whether we had that flexibility to negotiate around this, but I don't believe anyone reacted and spoke directly about this comment.
I mean, I'm just getting the feeling that was this memo like the pink elephant in the room?
Well,
I object.
Yeah. I'll withdraw the question.
Yeah.
It was a bit vague.
No, okay. I withdraw.
We would all have a different understanding of the term pink elephant. Mr. Keeler is correct. So it's withdrawn.
All right.
Sustained. Please proceed, Ms. Stagg.
And going to page 2 of Exhibit 9, again, there's a highlight. The adjusted proposal did not meet the requirements of the school operation and all these price issues. Did anyone raise these concerns or discuss these concerns after reviewing this memo?
I don't recall any discussion of that. I mean, as I stated, to me, this was the internal opinion from our CIP guy. I didn't take it as a procurement. Or a legal opinion. So when I saw statements like that, I didn't take that as the final word, that if there were issues, it would have to be raised in proper, with the proper expertise.
But from what you're saying, the negotiating committee did not really have a strong reaction to this negotiation?
We didn't parse it.
I think we're getting the third time into what the reaction of the negotiating committee was.
All right.
I don't think
we're
going to elicit any different responses.
Okay. Last question on this memo. Page 3 of the memo, there is a reference in paragraph 1 to a secondary road at the cost of $125,000. You see that?
Right.
Right. And you agree that that was not included in Jeep's original proposal, correct?
Okay. Right.
All right. And was there any discussion regarding that in the committee?
I don't believe there's any. Again, I don't believe we discussed the contents of this particular memo in any detail. We didn't review this memo as a committee. Mm-hmm. I believe members had access to it and were able to see it. I believe at the end of the day, we were able to describe that the secondary road was included as part of this, but I don't recall any specific discussion about what it was excluded. I don't recall that.
Going to Exhibit 12.
Just for my edification, Mr. Fernandez, about the secondary road, was this included in the final proposal by you at all?
Yes.
So it's something that is, we went forward with the Geese proposal and we contracted with them, the secondary road would be built. Is that correct?
I believe so. That's my recollection, yes.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Okay, going to Exhibit 12, page 6. This is the April 22nd proposal, correct?
Yes.
And it was a proposal for, if I go to Exhibit page 12, the same exhibit, $76.8 million.
Yes.
And this was the one accepted by the negotiating committee.
Correct.
Right. And this particular proposal, the April 22nd, 2016 proposal, $76.8 million, was not comply with all the Exhibit A design parameters, correct?
It complied with the, it did not include every single item in the exhibit A.
Right. Okay. And let's go to the memo that's in front of it. Exhibit 12, page 1.
Okay.
Dated May 13, 2016. This is the memo of the negotiating committee. Who prepared this?
I believe DPW did.
Any specific person?
I'm not sure. I know DPW, with support of council, who prepared this.
Okay. Did you have an opportunity to review and comment?
I did review it, yes. And we did have an opportunity to review and comment.
Right, because you have to sign it in the back,
right? Yeah, yes, I was trying to think of the timing.
You signed it?
Yes.
All right. And when you signed it, all right, so going to page Exhibit 12, page 3.
Yes, I got it.
The negotiation committee, I guess, lists a bunch of bullet points in this memo, highlighting. Is it highlighting discussions or highlighting thoughts? What are these bullet points?
I didn't prepare it, but I assume they're just the highlights of the final agreement.
Right, and why do you feel that this proposal is acceptable?
Right.
And here you have included is you have the secondary gated access on page 3. That's the secondary road?
Correct.
Right. And then also there's three bullets below that, or three bullets if you count from the bottom, three above. It says DEEF has completed 10 projects on Guam, correct?
Correct.
All right. And paragraph beginning on the bottom of page 3. It says there are minor deviations from Simon Sanchez considerations. You're referring to Exhibit A, right?
Correct.
All right. So, and you list those deviations. Proposals you saw, including the original proposal from DEEF, all right? Which proposal was most compliant with Exhibit A?
I don't really like any comment on that, I'm trying to recall. Because when we were looking at all the proposals at the same time, we were during the evaluation stage and we were really focused in on the qualifications and set forth in the criteria. We really didn't get into the very deep details of Exhibit A until we reviewed the DEEF proposal. So we didn't have the same level of scrutiny.
You were looking at Exhibit A and evaluations?
It was concluded, the way the offerors would approach the project and the information they wanted to include, whether it was very general or very detailed, would have been included in their proposals. But the focus of the committee was on the criteria needed to get through stage one, which was the evaluation of qualifications based on the RFP criteria. So it was at the second stage where we were going to get into further detail on the Exhibit A, whether the proposal included and at what cost the items in Exhibit A. So we did not have the benefit of looking at three proposals at the same time. We focused on DEEF and got into the more detailed conversations with them as the highest qualified offer.
When you say phase two, you're talking about negotiation?
The negotiations.
Okay,
yes.
So phase one being
evaluation.
Phase two. Okay. So, in your declaration,
yes.
I'm going to direct you to Exhibit O and the unbound documents. Is that?
I have an O here in the back.
Not sure. I think it's in the unbound. Is there an O there?
No, it would be the black line.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, that's the little
mine looks thicker.
What exhibit are we looking at?
O as in.
Is it capital O or little O?
It only has a capital O.
All right, so that would be this one
here. W.
Okay.
Okay.
Before we go to exhibit O, I just want to make sure you understood my question, my previous question, because I know you went into evaluation. I was actually focusing on the negotiation phase. Just so we, you didn't misunderstand me, and we have, we're on the same page. My question was, of the original proposal that was submitted by you, and the four additional proposals that were submitted by you during negotiations, which of those five most complied with exhibit A?
I believe the final one, met the requirements of exhibit A. I don't want to use the word complied because I still insist that these were, as far as negotiation, we view these as considerations, not to be matched letter by letter, but that we substantially met the parameters set forth in exhibit A.
Okay.
So that was that's my interpretation of that.
That's your interpretation of exhibit A?
Yes.
Not exhibit, not the original one. Original proposal.
I don't really recall all the. I mean, it's hard for me to recall all the details. I know that I can testify that with the final proposal, we worked very hard to substantially meet those requirements. But knowing that we had some flexibility that it wouldn't completely mirror the exhibited requirements.
For instance, the auditorium reduced it by 250 seats.
Correct.
So that's not a mirror, right?
It doesn't mirror, right.
Right. And then there is the cafeteria 40% seating requirement.
Okay.
It didn't mirror that either, right?
Okay.
Correct?
I'd have to just verify, but yes, that's...
Right. And then there is a reduction in classrooms.
Yes.
Right. All right. Did you recall if the original proposal had those items?
I don't recall.
All right.
That.
The directing attention to exhibit O, which is in front of you.
Right.
Is it your declaration?
Yes.
Who prepared it for you? Is anyone?
I believe I received this from Randy, who might have worked at DPW.
I beg your pardon?
I believe Randy Romero gave it to me. I believe it was prepared in partnership with DPW. I didn't prepare it, so.
All right. So directing your attention to paragraph 5 on page 2 of the exhibit O.
Right.
And you state here that the negotiating team was asking for, asking G.
Correct.
Requested separate times from G to notify what the government would get, and you have this spectrum for a low set price,
right,
and then one that's without cost being a primary factor. You see that?
Right.
All right. And the low set price was at the $60 million proposal, correct?
Correct.
All right. And the price, the proposal with cost without being a primary factor. That means everything all in.
Right. My interpretation was that was the $89 million
proposal. Objection.
That's the original proposal.
Right.
Objection.
Okay.
It's the exact same testimony we went over this morning.
The answer to question. This is declaration. We're asking what he's saying in his declaration.
Overrule the objection and allow Ms. Tang to inquire what he meant by in his declaration, which was submitted by the government that was received.
Right. So the $89 million was the original proposal.
With the caveat, Ms. Tang, that we've gone over it already, and
okay,
it's just cumulative, and there are some limits there.
Okay. Receive. All right. But the $89 million proposal was not requested, it was the original proposal, right? The $89 million proposal was not requested, it was the original Eve proposal.
We requested the costs We requested the information on, the full information on costs that differed from what was included in their original proposal. So the $89 million was at the behest of our negotiation committee when we met with GEEF, and they indicated that there were some costs that were not spelled out or excluded for whatever reason. And we asked them to come back and make sure that we had a good understanding of all the costs associated with the project.
All right, but price was not a factor. So when you were asking them for a proposal, that was the exercise you're talking about, the four modified proposals. You're saying, give me a proposal where price is not a factor. That's not what happened. It was the original proposal.
Right. No, I guess
where price was not a factor. Isn't it true?
The full proposal that they presented, I considered the Cadillac version of everything that they could possibly do was included, right? And to simply clarify what those costs were, was where we asked for that full end amount. So
okay.
That's what I believe was the full amount. We did not ask. I did not recall asking them after that amount, after soliciting that information, whether there was another proposal that would be with all the bells and whistles beyond that.
But you only, when you asked for clarification, it was only on the $16.1 million additional cost. You did not ask for a new proposal. You testified earlier that you asked for additional cost. And
Ms.
there was
Tang,
a breakdown,
I think
correct?
We already went through this in great detail, the process
right.
where they got the proposal. There were some items that weren't included. They asked for the cost for those items, and it was like 16.1. So
I'll move on.
Let's move on.
Thank you. Let's go to Exhibit 40. Mr. Fernandez. Page 17, last page, it bears your signature?
Yes.
All right. And who brought this document to you for signature?
The DPW did.
Anyone at DPW?
I don't recall. I don't recall. I would only say Mr. Beneventi was helped present it.
All right. And did you have a chance to review this before you signed it?
I did review it, yes.
All right. Did you have any issues with it?
None that I can recall.
Directing attention to section 3.1.
Okay.
Are you aware that section 3.1?
Yes.
Are you familiar with that section?
I am.
And are you aware of, is it your understanding that DPW, and this contract can exceed $100 million, that the DPW director wrote in writing, permitted it to exceed $100 million?
It is not my understanding that there was the ability to exceed $100 million.
What was your understanding?
My understanding throughout this process was that this RFP was capped at $100 million.
Okay. But what was your, do you see section 3.1, it says?
I do. And
that's otherwise directed by Director DPW in writing.
Right.
It would be capped at $100 million unless directed by the director of DPW in writing. So what did you understand that to mean?
So my understanding of that was that under Public Law 32-120 and 121 or any other law, my understanding was that there existed another law that had capped the procurement $100 million, and I think that law was 32229. Now, I know there's been discussion about that, but because I have not, further delved into whether there is some issue there, I do recall that several times we discussed in committee and clarified, because I had that question, that for the purposes of this RFP, it was capped at $100 million. So that was my assumption that there were restrictions on this RFP.
Okay, so I'm going to direct you to Exhibit 8.
Yes, it was a phone conversation, and I'm going to go ahead and accede to the date that she states it. And I called her because I was, as part of the process, after seeing the proposals that had already been put out there, yes, it was my concern that it appeared to me that the revenue streams that were set forth in the laws would be able to leverage in excess of $100 billion. And I know that over the past 2 years, there have been some, you know, depending on who you spoke with, there might be some disagreement as to whether or not there was a cap, a limit, or so forth. During our procurement process, I made sure to ask in committee and to clarify and confirm that the understanding of the committee was that this RFP was capped at $100 million, but that immediately raised my concern, which was, if there is excess revenue on the table, how do we move forward beyond this RFP to access that revenue for our schools, knowing that whether the school, Simon Sanchez, costs 60 or 90, the immediate response would be how much is left for the other schools. So my question to the speaker was more to inform me about whether or not we would need additional legislation once we finish this RFP to access the additional revenue, or whether we simply could procure those additional services for anything in excess of $100 million. And that was kind of because it had been an ongoing discussion and different laws, you know, impacting each other, it was more along the lines of, you know, do we need to come back to you if we wanted to, you know, access anything over $100 million and not leave it to the rest of the, you know, to other projects that the legislature or other agencies might have.
How did the discussion of exceeding the $100 million cap begin, or how did that get triggered?
That's always been a discussion, as far as I know, with when we've been discussing this RFP since the laws were passed about whether, I mean, I would just say that whether or not there was a cap on the amount, and I think the issue has always been because there were several laws impacting upon this procurement, and I really wanted to, and I was glad, very 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 glad to have the Attorney General's office in our in some of the preliminary preparation discussions to clarify that for the rest of us who did not have a real comfortable understanding of how those laws put together.
So it started as early as the time when the two laws were passed. And that would be
the 2014.
2014, right? But when the RFP was drafted, they put a cap of $100 million, correct?
Correct.
Was there any discussion during that time about that cap prior to finalizing the RFP?
Prior to finalizing, I don't believe so. I believe it was the shared understanding that this was going to be capped at $100 million. Now, that obviously is to my frustration, because I want as much as possible.
Okay.
But knowing that this RFP was capped at $100 million, the reason I called the speaker was because I just felt if we had to go to the legislature to get an additional authority, we should start that process now and let this RFP complete and then be ready to go with a new RFP or whatever, you know, if that was the case. And so when she said it was her interpretation, I don't take that as the gospel. I just, as her legislative intent, that it was no cap, I just, okay, that's her understanding. And when we get to that stage, you know, we can reconfirm that we don't need to go to the legislature. We might just be able to go through a separate procurement for anything in excess of $100 million.
And you agree with me that all the other proposers when they submitted their proposals was bidding on a project or submitting a proposal for a project with a $100 million cap, correct? Is that your
understanding? That's my understanding, right?
Right.
My understanding is that
and,
that was understood.
And that this change, if you will, the cap opinion, April 13, 2016, letter, the discussions about, you know, exceeding $100 million, that was not something that was information that was available to the other offerors, correct, at that time?
I think every offeror had an opportunity to review the laws, and I just think it's a difference of opinion between lawyers. My approach would always be, as a government official, that to confirm those things, I would need to confirm that with the Attorney General's office. DOE has our own counsel working to confirm whether or not my understanding was correct for the AG's office, since I think that would control, you know, whether you're able to contract for those services. So I know it was up in the air, and I wasn't sure I was completely comfortable with what the laws meant, what the speaker intended, and what we were doing. But my understanding was the RFP was capped at $100 million. And so my thought process was, how do we, if once we get this done, hopefully soon, we would then be able to say, what do we do with the additional revenues that might be available?
I'm really directing the question at fairness to other proposers. Are you saying that too bad you didn't ask? So you're stuck with that? Is that what you're saying?
What I'm
saying. Hey, wait, before we go on. Okay, Mr. Keeler, this is your objection.
Well, she's offering testimony once again. There's nothing stating that the other offerors are prejudiced or anything of that nature.
Okay. Mr. Eddy, did you have an objection to that?
No? I join his objection.
In response to the objection, Ms. Tang?
I think this is a fair question. He just testified that while the offer, and I'm trying to remember what he said, but he said something to the effect that when I asked about the other offers, did they, whether this information was available, he says, well, you know, they didn't ask this question. So I said, well, are you saying that this is because they didn't ask?
My recollection was he wasn't talking about the other offers. He was talking about DOE, and if there was more money that could be leveraged.
Right.
If they need another law, he wanted to start the process now. That's my recollection of his testimony. I don't see.
Let me ask for a clarification.
Okay. I'm going to allow you to rephrase your question.
Right. I'll ask him to clarify. So, Mr. I just want you to clarify your response. I think my earlier question was, you're aware that the other offers were not aware that there were these discussions about exceeding the $100 million cap during negotiations, correct?
They were not aware because I don't believe, I personally did not discuss exceeding the cap with any offer, including you.
Okay.
The only discussion I ever had about what was number one with our committee about, are we clear that this is a $100 million cap? And I was repeatedly affirmed, yes, it is. I said, okay. And then number two, because you know, there were proposals to leverage more than $100 million, I needed to know where we stood with that, and the response was, we are clear, it's a cap. So my next question was to the speaker, that if you know, as the author of the bill, what was your intent, and do you think that we need to come back? You know, basically that was the intent of the conversation. Do we need to come back, or is it already, do we have that authority to move forward with, you know, a procurement after this is completed to access those revenues?
Did you say that there was a proposal to exceed the $100 million cap?
No.
Okay.
No.
So I'm going to direct you to Exhibit 6.
Okay.
You seen this opinion?
Yes.
This was given to you, the committee?
I received a copy of it, sure.
Right, as a committee member. And it would have been for me, right?
Right.
This was, you received it maybe in April? 2016?
Yeah, it's March, dated March 3rd.
Okay, so, and directing your attention to paragraph, the bottom paragraph on page 2, last sentence, says basically, we believe that based on these calculations, that the schools can leverage up to $160 million. You see that?
Yes. Yes.
Is that what you were talking about, this discussion about exceeding 100 million?
No.
Okay, was this ever discussed?
About this discussion? No, the discussion I'm referencing is there's always been an ongoing, well, I'm going to say just a general discussion about what the laws allow for DOE and whether we're capped at $100 million or not. And I think in the construction of the RFP, the question was, do we need to cap it or not? And we just at that point, the RFP ended up capping. And so I said, okay, that's, so right. I didn't discuss it with any offeror. And in fact, I saw this, I did not know where it came from, and I found, quite frankly, found it irrelevant because of we had already determined that there was a, I mean, for the purposes of this RFP, we had already determined there was a cap.
You said you found the CFJ opinion irrelevant. Tell Fisher Jacob.
Well, it didn't impact my thinking about the cap or not. I figured this was their attorney's opinion.
Okay.
It didn't raise any questions about whether we need to change anything in our procurement process. And my understanding was that too bad, you know, for anybody, we're capped.
Okay.
And we would have to access those revenues through some other mechanism.
And then, but it also, 2 weeks or around the same time frame, April 13th, you went and had conversations with the speaker, and she responded to the issue on the cap to you, which is Exhibit 8, right?
No, I believe our conversation was back in January.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
Correct.
It was in January. Why did she provide a letter to you in April?
I'm not sure.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Yeah, it says an introduction. It says, recently it's come to my attention you had some concerns regarding borrowing capacity.
I just figured that recent referred to as recently as January. I don't know. I didn't.
Really?
We had a conversation in January. I didn't discuss it with her. I just figured that, you know, we're settled as a committee, that we're working with a $100 million cap, and that based on her response to me, I figured that when we were ready, once we were done with the master facility plan, the comprehensive CIP, our next step would be, again, subject to a reconfirmation, we would be able to procure through a separate procurement that remaining work. My response, my understanding of our conversation really was, you know, her urging was finish your master plan before you go out and get any other work. But that was the only thing I took from our conversation.
Letter from Senator Wompat to Geef?
I don't. I provided it only to the committee. And even then, I wasn't sure it was part of the procurement. I just raised it to their attention just so ensure that it's disclosed and they can include it in the record if necessary.
When did you provide it around the time you received the letter?
Before you proceed with that, when you say committee, we're talking about
the negotiation committee.
Thank you very much.
Sorry.
Exhibit 45, please.
Okay.
Page CT001240. Exhibit 45, and the base number is CT001240. There's an email from Jenna Levinian.
Okay.
dated April 22nd, 2016, at the very bottom. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
And she states here that a letter from Speaker Wompat is attached. She's directing this email to Tom Keeler. She says that she got a copy of this letter from the GDOE. So she would have gotten it from you?
I did not. I don't know where she received it, if she received it. I don't know if that's accurate. I certainly did not send any email to Janlin.
Who else would have sent such a letter from DOE?
I don't know.
You were the recipient of the letter from Ms. Wompat, right?
Correct.
Who did you disseminate or share that letter with?
It would have been with Ms. Romero and my assistant.
Who is your assistant?
My executive assistant, Maria Roberto.
All right. Do you think either of them would have shared it without your approval?
I don't think so. I hope not.
Okay, so...
I certainly didn't.
So... Okay. Going back to the IDIQ contract, which is Exhibit 40.
Okay.
Please go to page 13, section 17.11.
Okay.
All right. Please review. Are you familiar with the subcontractor section?
Let's hear. I can. I have to review it, but yes.
What section?
17.11, page 13. Second sentence, government hereby approves developer subcontract with Guam Education Development Partners.
Okay.
Do you know who Guam Education Development Partners is?
I did not at the time.
Do you know who they are now?
I only from the news, yeah.
From where?
From news reports related to this protest.
So in your work as the evaluation committee member and the negotiating committee member, you were not able to ascertain or determine who GEDP is?
Correct. It was not a discussion or DOE.
How about from your review of the documents and the proposal?
As I mentioned before, our focus primarily was on the benefits and the costs for the project, and we left most procurement decisions to DPW, so we didn't focus on some of these components here.
When you say you left most of the procurement decisions to DPW, as it relates to GDP, what decisions did you...
I mean, whether or not the subcontractor provision is appropriate or not, and in compliance with laws and RFPs, I did not review that myself for compliance. I left that to the attorneys and to the procuring agency.
Was that ever discussed during the negotiations?
No.
Was it ever raised?
I don't recall it ever coming up. The first I heard of it was in the protests and in the news.
Do you have an opinion now?
My opinion.
Objection. The question is vague. Opinion as to why.
Whether it's appropriate.
Opinion as to what's appropriate.
Whether it is appropriate for the government to approve developers subcontract with GDP.
Okay. On that rephrasement of the question, Mr. Aguirre?
He testified that he's not familiar. He's left these decisions to DPW. He's not aware of any of these facts, and yet she's...
He also testified that he heard some news reports.
That's right.
And he's just asking what his opinion is now. Like I said, I'm going to overrule the objection aloud. That's more an argument on closing as to what way to give this opinion. If he has one, please proceed.
Thank you.
Right. So I'm not sure I'm aware of all the facts related to this, but mm-hmm. But in my role as DOE, I would assume that if these issues are raised, that they were DPW and the Attorney General's office in reviewing the merits of these, and also through this office, be able to settle that issue. I don't have an opinion. I don't know them. I don't know the details and facts. It was never discussed with me as to whether or not a subcontract provision complied or didn't. This is the procurement process. Our focus is really on the benefits and the cost to the school system.
Okay. You signed a contract that would result in the award of $100 million contract to GEEF.
Correct.
And you don't have an opinion today.
Objection. Okay, now, Ms. Tang, you're getting a little argumentative. I'm going to ask you to move on.
All right. Did you ever discuss, just to confirm, there's a reference here to consenting to the subcontract. Did you ever see such a subcontract or discuss such a subcontract between GEEF and GDP during your negotiation?
I don't recall reviewing a subcontract.
How big a pardon?
I don't recall reviewing any subcontract.
How about discussing
it? Or discussing it.
Did you ever discuss GEDP providing a performance and payment bond during the negotiating meetings?
I'll be honest, I don't believe I ever discussed GEDP in any matter or form personally in these negotiating committees, so
I would say no. During the negotiations, was it your understanding that he would be entering into the construction contract with Hansel Phelps?
I believe that was discussed, yes.
Was that your understanding?
My understanding, yes.
And that Hansel Phelps would put up the performance and payment bond?
Again, I did not get into the details of that discussion. There are requirements for the performance bond. DPW is to handle and ensure that those requirements are met, and council was able to assist them in that, so we did not, as DOE, focus on that. We relied on the procuring agency to make sure all requirements are met.
With respect to the RFP, was your understanding that the contractor, Hansel Phelps, would provide a $100 million bond?
With regard to their proposal?
With respect to the performance.
Is an objection. What's the objection, Mr. Field?
He just testified that he was relying on the procuring agency and that he didn't pay attention or focus on the details of such.
Ms. Tang, your response to the objection?
I think my earlier question was limited to the question. I asked him the question of whether Hansel Phelps was the contractor for GEEF, and then we proceeded to ask questions about the $100 million performance bond requirement in the RFP. That is totally within his knowledge.
He said that he was relying on DPW to handle those matters. He may have been aware, he's aware that Hansel Phelps was a subcontractor.
That's not what he testified to. I'm sorry, that's not his testimony.
I'll allow you to clarify that part of the testimony that you received from there. I'll allow you to go in there. Objection overruled at this time. Please proceed.
You're aware of the RFP. Thank you. You're aware the RFP requires a $100 million performance bond, payment and performance bond by the contractor, correct?
I'm aware of the requirement.
Right, and that performance of payment, Hansel Phelps was the contractor for GEEF.
That's my understanding.
Yes, and because of the requirements of the RFP, Hansel Phelps should be putting up the $100 million performance bond, correct?
If that situation has changed or would change, that would be with DPW. I didn't focus on monitoring that component. Okay. I'm just recalling what was in the original proposal.
Do you recall if there's another proposal, the proposal referred to another contractor providing the construction services?
No, I'm not.
Do you recall if the proposal said that another contractor would put up the performance and payment bond?
I'm just object to this line of questioning. We're getting now into the contents of the proposals.
I don't think there's any foundational fact showing that he has knowledge of the performance bond other than what he's testified to.
Okay. Mr. Fernandez?
Sustained objection. Please proceed.
I'll be friends. Mr. Fernandez, was it your understanding that Hansel Phelps was doing all of the work for GEEF?
objection as to the questions that we use? I mean, doing all the work for
construction work.
Objection overruled with the restated question. Please answer the question to the best of your ability.
My recollection is that Hansel Phelps would be the contractor for Simon Sanchez High School.
How about the remaining?
I don't recall the specifics on that.
Okay. I don't have any further questions at this time. Thank you.
Before we proceed, how long did you anticipate your cross-examination to take, Mr. Keeler?
It's hard to say.
I mean, an hour, 2 hours?
No, it would take less than that.
Less than that, okay. Mr. Eddy, how long would it take your cross, Mr. Fernandez? We're still going to proceed after this, but I'm just trying to gauge, because you're the one that brought the issue up. If we break it 5, would that be enough time for you? I take it, as I recall, is it Matic or Maritza?
Maritza.
Maritza? Okay. Is that enough time for you? Is this hopefully it's not a life and death situation?
Okay. That's why I was requesting to get out a little earlier because of the traffic right now. So
I understand that. I just want to make sure that is 5 sufficient for you?
I'm hoping. I'm just wondering. My preference is to, break early so that I can beat the traffic.
Okay. Well, let's take a 5-minute break and come back. We'll start with Mr. Keeler's cross examination. We'll go as far as I can. Okay.
We're off the record at 3:59 p.m. The time is 4:08 p.m. We're back on the record for the formal hearing continuation of OPAPA 16-007 and 16-011.
Before we proceed with Mr. Keeler's cross-examination, Mr. Fernandez, I just had a question about some of your testimony on direct. In Exhibit 8, essentially, which is Speaker Wompat's April 13, 2016 letter.
Right.
We testified that we conceded, as you state, to the date in the letter that there was a January 7, 2016 conversation between you and Speaker Wompat. Did you have any other written correspondence between Speaker Wompat between January 7th and April the 13th?
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
No.
Okay. No, I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you very much. Mr. Keeler, here with us for cross-examination.
Do you know why it took, did you ask her to respond in writing?
No.
So were you surprised when you got the letter?
I did. I didn't actually think that conversation was relevant to this procurement. I thought it was, for me, looking ahead.
Because of the $100 million.
My biggest worry was, do we have to come back to the legislature, which is its own process, to get additional authority if we're able to leverage more resources? And so that was my, because if so, then you want to start that process as soon as you can.
Sure. And you weren't expecting her to respond?
No.
So
I just wanted her intent and what she said, and I was fine with that.
And you were fine. So were you surprised when you got the letter?
Yes, and I shared it with the committee just as to full disclosure that this was sent to me. And,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Keeler, your witness for cross-examination.
Thank you. Mr. Fernandez, the negotiating committee was comprised of 3 members. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And who were those members?
It would be Mr. Beneventi from DPW, myself, and then Juana Silva Tyron from DITA.
Thank you. And you stated that Randy Romero was your liaison in this Chairman?
He was my support staff on this, right, in this.
Okay, and what exactly was he expected to do for you?
He was very familiar with our CIP projects before, and he was very familiar with the RFP, and had been active in giving input. So he was intended to help ensure that DOE's interests were protected by being providing input on the details of the program, should there be discussions of scope, make sure that we came out of there, you know, with what we needed. And I asked him also to be able to support, whatever agency questions might come up around DOE needs, so he would have that information to be able to provide that.
And when he made these suggestions and input to you, it was up to you to make the final decision, correct?
Are you referring to the memo or any
determinations and negotiation phase of the procurement?
In the negotiation phase, our view is that DPW is charged ultimately with deciding that piece, and that everything we provided was input to be accepted or dismissed as at the desire of the committee.
Okay, and the procurement was done in two phases, is that correct?
There was an evaluation stage, then a negotiation stage, so two phases.
Okay, and what role did Price play in the first phase of that evaluation?
It was provided as information in the proposals, to extend the offers wanted to provide it, but it was not given a particular weight in the evaluation, as we were guided by the RFP criteria, which identified clearly what we should be focusing on.
And Jeef was the number one selected contractor, is that correct?
And Jeef was the was ranked the highest qualified offer.
Okay. For phase two, what role did you expect Jeef to take?
In phase two?
Yes, the negotiation phase of the procurement.
Jeef or GDOE? Jeef. Jeef would be there at the negotiation table to clarify and come to an agreement on the final cost and of the Simon Sanchez project.
Okay, Mr. Fernandez, I would appreciate it if you could please take a look at Cortec Exhibit 2, page 6.
Dated September 25th, 2015. Is that the right?
That is correct.
Okay.
Okay, if you could turn to the next page.
Okay.
There is a section entitled Intent. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
Okay, could you please look at the last paragraph in that section and read it to yourself?
Correct. Okay, I've read it, yes.
Okay, and does that section authorize the negotiating committee to negotiate a scope of work and fee estimate?
That was my understanding of our role.
Okay, so by scope of work, what do you mean? What do you understand that to mean?
The scope of work is the work that's to be accomplished as part of the project. So with regard to Simon Sanchez, it would be all the work associated with constructing a new Simon Sanchez.
So if you were authorized to negotiate the scope of work, that would mean that you would be able to revise or have input on what that scope is that correct?
My interpretation is, if we're to negotiate it, that we'd be able to modify some of those terms as part of the negotiation.
Okay, and balanced out with those modifications would be the fee estimate, or what the cost of the project would be?
I think ultimately our understanding was we needed to come up with the best value proposal for the project, and that meant balancing, the cost as well as what would be included in the final work product.
Could you please take a look at Cortec Exhibit 2, page 16?
Yes. Okay.
And is that document entitled Simon Sanchez High School Considerations?
Yes.
And by considerations, what do you think that was intended to mean?
The intent was to provide the desired parameters for the school, but I did not take those to be technical requirements set in stone. So they were to be given consideration as part of the negotiations.
And that's because the ultimate goal was the best value for the school, correct?
I think the ultimate goal was to be able to, in the negotiation process, find an ability to balance out the cost with what the school was able to obtain and to maximize that value for the school system.
So is it correct to say that there wasn't a desire to get the lowest price school available?
No, I mean, that wasn't the sole determinant.
Who prepared Exhibit A? Do you know?
I believe that was based on the input from the school system, which would have gone through Randy Romero for final compilation into this exhibit.
Okay, when you say the school system, would that be the principal?
The principal and the various, so we did have sessions for the principal and faculty and students, I guess, were able to give input as to what they had hoped to see in the Simon Sanchez High School, and that then was compiled by Randy and then assembled into these considerations.
And are you aware any of the individuals that you just referenced from the Simon Sanchez High School having any type of expertise or experience in designing school buildings?
Their only experience, most of them, is with Simon Sanchez High School. So I think they were gathering to identify what they wanted on their wish list. And it was basically, I mean, it was based on also their existing conditions at Simon Sanchez High School. So I think they came motivated to avoid things that were done in the past and then, you know, ensure that we took into consideration what they thought they needed as part of, and it was done by department and by, you know, by the different grade levels. So they were able to really think closely about the curriculum and how the facility might ensure that they're able to meet their curricular instructional needs.
And during the procurement, were there various meetings between government officials, school officials, and JEEP?
Yes.
Okay, could you describe what those meetings were?
I know there was the occasion to do a walkthrough of the school facilities, and then a review of as these proposals were developed, a view of what the impact would be of some of the modifications. And so we were careful to continue to get input from the school so that we didn't end up agreeing on something that would not meet the needs at the ground level.
Okay, and did JEEP participate in those meetings?
I believe so, yes.
What was the reason for their participation?
Just so they could have a better understanding of what those needs were at the ground level, so it wasn't simply on paper, but they were able to understand and to see, you know, how things were working at the school. So, you know, those discussions would, you know, I think some of those discussions would center around what some alternatives might be to meeting the needs of some of those faculty members.
And in that regard, is it correct to state that the government was relying on the expertise of the selected contractor?
I would say that it was we wanted to ensure that we had the expertise of the contractor, as well as ensure that we were constantly getting input from the schools. So, for instance, if we walked into a room, it was, you know, especially as we did our walkthrough, it was important for us to know that the teacher wanted more storage space versus classrooms phase and have that, you know, be considered as when we started to amass the input from the schools. So the contractor is there to say, okay, we hear you, and we understand now in more detail what you want to accommodate. And at the school level, we had some assurance that we're able to provide input from the ground level into this process.
Okay. And as a result of that, there were certain revisions to Exhibit A as the negotiations proceeded. Is that correct?
I don't believe there were changes to Exhibit A. There were changes to what was being included in the cost and scope of what was being covered by those costs. So in these different variations, there were different, you know, iterations of how many classrooms, how many labs, and so forth. So the Exhibit A, as I understood, stayed the same. It's just as we were just negotiating, we were making sure that we were trying to, you know, abide by those considerations, but make sure that we had a good price for everything. So,
okay. One of the items that ultimately changed was reducing the auditorium from 750 seats to 500 seats. Can you tell us what the discussions were with regards to that?
I mean, it's basically a cost-benefit analysis of knowing that we were trying to, you know, achieve a good price for and meet the needs of the schools, and recognizing that, you know, we might want to, you know, trim back on things that might be, you know, where it made sense, I guess. So for Simon Sanchez, they lack an auditorium. We have an auditorium at Southern High School, and I think part of our discussion was, you know, even though there was a proposal to eliminate the auditorium completely to get a much lower cost, we decided that we did want to make sure there was an auditorium because we see the fact that, you know, we lack that, you know, opportunity for students up north. However, whether it needed to be 750 or 500 was what we ended up discussing. So we definitely wanted to have an auditorium, and we decided that, you know, given the overall needs of the school, reducing the auditorium would allow us to maintain a reasonable cost without sacrificing essentially the function of the auditorium at that site. I believe that, you know, when these were proposed, the schools, you know, the school chose a number and this is how large we want it. But at the end of the day, when you're looking at, do we want to, you know, make adjustments to the classrooms or the fields, or we thought the auditorium would be one area where we could still have that significant, you know, function at the school, but maybe reduce the number of seats to 500.
Does Southern High School have an auditorium?
Yes, it does.
Is it? What is the size of it?
I believe it seats up to 1,000.
Okay. Are there maintenance or other concerns with regards to Southern High School?
I mean, there are always some maintenance issues that we try to attend to. And the capacity there is also challenging because we are not typically able to fill the auditorium at that 1,000 capacity. So even the programming is a challenge to make sure we have constant utilization of that facility, given that we're paying a significant amount to maintain and operate that facility.
And is the cost of construction for the auditorium higher than the rest of the school?
Yeah, there's higher costs associated with the auditorium than it is with the other parts of the school.
So, in reducing the size of the auditorium, is it your opinion that you got the best value for it, the school?
I believe that we did get the best value from the overall proposal, and it and reducing the auditorium allowed us to get to that value.
Okay. Mr. Fernandez, could you take a look at CoreTech Exhibit 9 on page 1? You previously testified as to that memorandum, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and In the introductory line, does Mr. Romero state that the primary focus of the negotiation is to obtain the best value as indicated in the public laws governing this legislation?
Yes, he does.
Okay. So the purpose of this memorandum was to share concerns with you as to proposals, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And the possibility that the negotiating committee possibly was steering off or losing focus on that, correct?
I believe at that time, as we started to focus in on price, by focusing on that price, we were losing focus on making sure that we were meeting the other needs of the school. So it was more to, by this point, we had already received the $63 million proposals, and I think our response, at least for GDOE, was, it's not price alone that we need to be considering. We need to make sure that what we get in terms of the work is maximized at a good amount, at a reasonable amount.
Okay, and is it fair to say that $63 million submittal clearly didn't provide the best value for it?
That was our opinion.
Department of Education?
Correct.
Now, Mr. Fernandez, there's been use of various terms in here, submittals, proposals, scenarios. With regards to something like the $63 million submittal, how would you characterize that?
I use the term scenario as a term I would use to describe that. We basically asked Gabe to come back with a $60 million scenario. So, whether it's not something that they propose unilaterally, we asked them to do so because as a committee, we wanted to get a sense of what that impact would be from the offerer's perspective if we asked them or required them to go down to that amount.
So is it correct to state that you were trying to get a better understanding of how the costs of the particular project were broken down?
Well, in addition to that, it was also to determine, because as part of negotiation, there were a number of different approaches that we could take. So under that approach, I think the idea was, if we only had $60 million, how close could we get to Exhibit A, and what would be the, and when we got that information, it was clear that the offeror was saying, look, you have to make these types of sacrifices to your program. So not just clarification, because we needed that clarification anyway, no matter what scenario we're talking about. But under that scenario, I think we did have kind of a sticker shock with $89 million. So we said, if you push the other way, what is it that we're going to see from the offerer?
So it's fair to say it was part of a negotiating tool.
Sure.
It was also part of it to educate the negotiating committee?
Absolutely.
Okay. Mr. Fernandez, could you take a look at CoreTech Exhibit 49?
Is this on March 16th?
That is correct. Have you seen that letter before?
Yes.
Okay. Could you take a look at the first line of the third paragraph?
Okay.
Is that statement consistent with your understanding as to what the submittal was for?
Yes.
Okay, what exactly was that?
We wanted to, by pushing the envelope down to a lower, in terms of trying to get a lower price point, we wanted to get a better understanding of, where the cost would be taken from to reach that number, and hopefully, as a committee, we would, get a better sense of where we wanted to end up over the negotiating process. So we understood what that full in $89 million proposal was as Geith proffered. We wanted to get the other extreme at a $60 million cost. And based on that, I felt we would be able to, as in discussing with the committee, understand the, you know, the impact of those fluctuations in price, and then using that to be able to inform, you know, how we wanted to proceed with the negotiations. Obviously, it's a bilateral discussion. And so if they came in and said, we do $60 million, we got everything, then that would have been one consideration. But if they said you can do it without an auditorium, so it just, it would change the way we, as a committee, approach the next step of the process.
And if you take a look at the bottom of Exhibit 49 and the top of the next page,
right,
there were specific items that you were looking to get a better understanding as to cost, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and so you were trying to get this information in order to better evaluate the existing proposal, is that accurate?
It was in order to facilitate the negotiation, right. The evaluation, so just to clarify, because the evaluation stage, we did not require the same level of breakdown and detail as we were now asking in the negotiation stage. So at the negotiation stage, we were then focusing in more closely on what cost they proposed and what they were able to achieve under those costs. And in order to do that, we had to break this down into much more detailed categories. Otherwise, we were just kind of working with an overall, you know, much larger numbers. And so that was the desire of the committee to formulate a breakdown in this manner.
And if you could also take a look at CoreTech Exhibit 51.
Okay.
And if you could review that, and in particular the first few sentences, do you recognize this?
I do.
Okay, and it's a letter dated April 1st, 2016 from Mr. Easter of G, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and if you could again review the first few sentences. Again, I would ask you whether that's consistent with your understanding as to what the submittals and negotiations were with Chief.
So yes, it was consistent with my understanding of what the negotiation committee wanted to, how we wanted to proceed.
And if you could take a look at CoreTech Exhibit 53.
Okay.
Do you recognize that document?
I do.
Okay. Is that a June 6th email from Randy Romero to me with the CC to you?
That's correct.
Okay.
What exhibit number again?
53. And in that, in item number one, it references the science labs.
Right.
Could you explain what this is addressing, what the point is being addressed here?
The idea there was to improve the utilization of the space that was being proposed by the offer. So we're looking at better utility of space, whether it was, you know, the co-sharing of labs, looking at whether all classrooms were needed or whether we would better utilize the space through other means. So all of those discussions were, we felt, intended to make sure that if any, we made any changes, they were sensible ones to the school.
Okay, and if you could go to the second full paragraph that states overall.
Yes.
Okay. Do you see the second sentence in there that states this does not affect the overall RFP intent?
I see that.
Okay. So the revisions, modifications, adjustments, in your opinion, were still consistent with the RFP?
I do. Randy, as my staffer and my liaison on behalf of DOE, was, as we discussed this, his charge was, as we had discussed and as you saw from his memo, was to try to achieve as much as possible the Exhibit A parameters, but that we had, because we had the flexibility to make any modifications that made sense, that we would facilitate those discussions with the offeror and make them, and we just, I think at the end of the day, we felt that these were sensible modifications which did not compromise what we were trying to achieve with this RFP.
If you could please take a look at Core Tech 1, page 15. Testified on this on your direct examination, is that correct?
On which?
I'm sorry, as to section 3.7.
Correct.
Okay. And if you could read that section carefully, in particular, the second sentence.
The second sentence of section 3.7?
Yes.
If a proposal is found to be non-responsive, it will not be considered further. Is that the one?
Well, no. The second sentence states proposals may be found non-responsive.
Okay, sorry. Then. Okay, may be found non-responsive at any time, yes.
Okay, so that's not mandatory, is it?
No, it doesn't appear to be mandatory.
And also, with regards to your testimony concerning this, there was a discussion regarding responsiveness, etc. That would have gone to phase one, correct? The evaluation?
Correct.
Okay. And so once you got to phase two, being the negotiation process, we would then go back to addendum 6 that you've already testified to, where you've stated that the scope of work and fee estimate could be negotiated.
I would say two things. Number one, yes, that's true. And number two, the other thing I testified to was 3.8 is who makes the determination. And my understanding was those procurement decisions would be made by DPW, so.
Okay. But the point being, the technical requirements of the RFP aren't controlling in phase two of the negotiations, correct?
I wouldn't venture a response in that. I would say that with regard to the scope, I understand that there was the ability to negotiate scope, as you pointed out, and that scope was entitled considerations, which also gave me the impression that those considerations we would try to meet, but were not mandatory. Other requirements in the RFP, I assume, would apply.
Mr. Hernandez, if you could please take a look at Portec Exhibit 13, page 5.
Okay.
Okay, and if you could take a look at the, what is marked Bates CT 13-5.
Okay.
Okay, specifically if you could look at section 3.1.
Okay.
Does that language place a $100 million cap on the project?
That was my understanding of that language.
Okay, and if you could take a look at Cortec Exhibit 10.
Okay.
Sorry, if you could go to 12.
Okay.
Do you recognize that?
Yes.
Okay. And if you could please go to page 4.
Okay.
Bullet point 4.
Okay.
Does that also provide that the cap on the contract is for $100 million?
Yes.
Now, with regards to this memorandum, you had pointed out that it contained, I believe you pointed out, contained provisions for the project or the negotiations, correct?
Excuse me? Could you repeat that?
Well, yeah, it's not very well worded. Could you please just take a second to review this? Okay. And was the purpose of the memorandum to memorialize the negotiations committee's actions?
Yes.
Okay. And does it highlight the specific or key points of the contract?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So what would you say the purpose of this memorandum was?
The purpose of the memorandum was to provide explanation of the negotiations and where we and the result of those negotiations through the phase two of this procurement.
Mr. Fernandez, it's been alleged that the government or negotiating team colluded to exceed the $100 million cap. Are you familiar with that?
The allegation?
Yes.
Yes.
What is your response to that?
I was not aware of any effort to exceed the cap. My understanding was that there was a hard cap in the RFP, and that was the end of it. I had no discussions about any intent to surpass that cap, at least as far as I was involved in any of these negotiations.
With regards to your communication with Senator Wompat, is it correct to say that you determined that there is additional financing available in the public laws?
Yes.
Okay. And is it fair to say that if those are acted on, they'll be handled via a separate RFP?
That's my understanding, and that was what I wanted to clarify, that there was no longer a need for any legislative action.
Okay. So the negotiating committee Department of Public Works did not have to go back to the legislature for additional authorization?
That's correct, for anything in excess of $100 million. Right.
Okay. Wait, for? Up to 100 or
right.
In excess?
So my understanding, well, my question was, if we wanted to access any additional revenue above $100 million and complete any work above that cost, whether my question was whether we need to go back to the legislature for authorization or whether we could proceed however we did it through a separate additional procurement. So my understanding was if the speaker's position is confirmed, because I would want confirmation of that, that no additional legislative authorization is needed, then it would indicate that we would be able to go and initiate another procurement for any work above and beyond $100 million. That was my, I mean, subject to confirmation. I mean, this is, it was just to understand whether additional legislation was needed to ensure that we didn't lose access to those funds.
But as it pertains to this particular RFP, it is capped?
Yes, frankly, I would have loved an RFP that didn't cap it, but all along the way, I was told that we were going to cap it, and, you know, DPW, I said, okay, that's the consensus, then it's capped. So my focus in these discussions were, okay, what about after we conclude this procurement, what can we do to access those additional funds?
But going back to her letter, though, she indicated, or let me rephrase, what was your understanding of her letter again?
Frankly, I didn't anticipate her letter. It was simply to it was in touching base with her just to see if she had any recollection of, you know, that discussion, whether there was capped or not, because my understanding was that it was capped. And apparently it's her position that there isn't a legislative cap, so that even if we capped it in the RFP, that was the decision of the, you know, the procuring agency, and that if we wanted to then go back and procure an additional amount of services, we did not have to come back to her. So she was the author, as the author of the legislation. So that was my question to her, whether she anticipated that we would have to come back to her to go over $100 million. And her response was no.
No, that would be for a subsequent procurement.
Right.
Correct?
Right, and I don't even know the answer to whether or not that's a DOE procurement or a DPW procurement or anything. I just know that it's her position that she doesn't have to do anything further, or the legislature doesn't have to do anything further.
Thank you. Sorry.
And to clarify, your conversation with Senator Wompat took place on or about January 7th, 2016.
Correct.
And if you could please go back to Exhibit 12.
Okay.
Okay. In negotiating the contract price for $76,867,335, the revisions that are noted therein, do you believe that you have negotiated the best value for the Department of Education?
That was a goal, and I think that's what we tried to do, yes.
And if you could please go to page 3 of that item.
Okay.
If you go to the last full paragraph.
Okay.
And there's a reference to the reduction of rooms, correct?
Correct.
And why were they reduced?
They were basically reduced with the input of the school to have better utilization of the space and to ensure that they were meeting the operational needs of the school.
Okay, and this memorandum states reduce the rooms only to those needed. Is that an accurate statement?
That's correct.
And in the same token, the next sentence states that by eliminating the four English rooms and adding and reducing the number of other rooms, GDOE was able to best meet its current and future needs.
Correct.
Is that an accurate statement?
Yes.
I have no further questions.
I know you need to leave, Mr. Aggie, but I anticipate you have a cross-examination
yes,
as well.
Sir.
All right. We will, did you want to go forward or do you want to wait till Thursday?
I think I'd wait until Thursday.
Okay. Then start. So we're going to take a break for this evening. We're going to recess. We're going to reconvene 9 a.m. on Thursday morning. We will start with Mr. Aggie's cross examination and Mr. Fernandez. Mr. Fernandez, once again, as your witness, I'm going to instruct you not to discuss your testimony with any other parties or any other persons until these proceedings have concluded. You understand that?
Yes.
Okay.
Just for fun, let everybody know next week what's going to happen.
Yep. Now, I don't anticipate Mr. Fernandez's testimony will take all day on Thursday, so who is the next witness you plan to call?
We would like to call Senator Wompat, and I think there are two more, Ms. Monica Silvertime,
okay.
And J. Kelly.
So there's at least three.
But they're going to be short.
All of them?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we will reconvene at 9 a.m. on Thursday.
And then any of that we need to go to planning purposes for next week? This 10 session is not available right now.
But I start an arbitration, so it's really.
On,
are we able to?
On Monday?
Is it all week next week?
It's. I have to double check. I think it's either 3 or 4 days.
Okay, well, I'll let you double check. We'll revisit the issue on Thursday when we have a little knowledge, but we might have to go into next week. Okay. That's what I anticipate, because if we finish your case in chief on Thursday, I think the other parties had at least 3, maybe 5 witnesses between them.
Could we kind of get an idea of how many witnesses you're calling?
We already discussed it, right? Combination is 3 to 5. Now, you might get a better sense of that towards the end of your case in chief.
Okay.
But we will reconvene. Any other matters we need to take up before we go?
And each day is going to be ending at on Thursday, ending at noon, and Friday, ending at noon.
Oh, so that's full
Thursday
day.
And Friday or
yes.
Just half days?
Yeah.
I thought
well, maybe
Thursday
like to about
full
12:30.
Day?
Okay, till about 12:30. So that's sorry, what's up?
Thank you.
We're off the record at 4:54 p.m.